This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Scoliosis is a medical condition where a person's spine twists and curves to the side. It can affect anyone of any age, but it usually develops in children aged between 10 and 15. 23-year-old Alex Earle was diagnosed with the condition in 2009, and 3 years later, in 2012, she was told she would need major surgery to fix the curve in her back, which was growing an inch every year. The Australian, who lives and works as a teacher in Chelmsford, was booked in for the surgery the following year, and that's where the name the girl with the iron spine comes from, as she now literally has an iron spine, with metal and screws all the way down her back. Following the major surgery, Alex subsequently landed in the fitness world, after her lung recovery meant she was unable to do any strenuous activity for months. As she sought to get her strength back, she came across a number of Instagram accounts that taught her specific routines, but also, more importantly, the right levels of balance to make it a success. Fast forward to the present day, and Alex has an Instagram account of her own, and a blog, and she is putting across those important messages to her own following. For everything regarding fitness, to moving to a new country, and dealing with major surgery, people know they can get advice from the girl with the iron spine. Brought to you by Essex Live, this is Humans of Chelmsford, and this is Alex Earle's story. Alex, it is a very warm welcome to the show, and thank you for being a guest on our latest episode of the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. Good. Just, you know, just your typical after school kind of thing.
Exactly. It's what you do on a normal day-to-day basis.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, so you're essentially the self-proclaimed girl with an iron spine. And the reason behind the iron spine is scoliosis.
Yep.
A condition where someone's spine twists and curves to the side. So we'll begin at the start, which I believe was in 2009.
Yeah.
When you first realised there was a problem. What was it that caused you to actually realise, hang on, something's not quite right here?
Okay. I was actually at boarding school and just making my bed, and I got this weird kind of sharp pain and collapsed onto the bed, essentially, and everyone was like, so I just kind of laid down on the bed, and the pain kind of subsided, but it was still a little bit sharp pains. That weekend I was luckily going to my cousins, and they pretty much were like, okay, we'll just take you to the doctor, see what's happening. So they took an x-ray, and he pretty much, the doctor just said, oh, you have scoliosis. And I was like, what the hell is that? I have no idea. Thought maybe I was dying, but probably not. And he just explained, yeah, it's just pretty much the curve of the spine, and that's, yeah, where it started. It wasn't as bad then as it was towards after a few years, but yeah, that's where it came from.
Yeah, when you hear a big scary word like that, scoliosis, and you don't know what it is, what does go through your mind?
At the time, I feel like I overreacted, but I was like, okay, I know all the cancers I feel, so it's definitely not like that, but I just generally had no idea, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm dying. Looked at my cousins, my auntie, and was like, what the hell? Kind of started freaking out, crying, And the doctor's like, it's okay. It's nothing bad. Like, it's just something to do with your spine. And then he explained it and I felt much better. Like, it was just 1 or 2 seconds where I was like, okay, this is a little bit scary. Yeah.
And the condition comes in various different forms. You can have your S curves and C curves.
Yeah.
Which one did you have and how did it actually affect you?
Yeah, I had the S curve, which the doctor had said that I was quite lucky with that because it evens out. Whereas if you have the C curve, it's kind of to one side, so it affects you a lot worse. With that, my bottom curve was quite, the degree was a lot more than my top one, so I was leaning to the side a little bit. But other than that, like between the difference of C and S, there's not a huge difference, except for the fact that there is more of a lean if you do have a C curve, pretty much.
So how do you manage that? Because surgery eventually becomes your option, but it was actually a few years from your initial diagnosis to you actually having surgery.
Yeah.
So what prompted the move to actually go down the surgical line?
Okay, well, it was, so I found out 2009, and then throughout the years, pretty much the doctors were like, just have checkups every 6 months and we'll see how it's going. And through those, I think, three-ish years, they were like, yeah, no, you're fine. Degrees are growing a little bit, but you're going through puberty still, so there's nothing really. They did say you could get a brace, but I was too far gone for that, so I couldn't exactly have a brace because there would have been no point to it, waste of money. But they were like, you're not too bad where you need surgery. So it's just kind of in between. And it's a waiting game. So, 2009, I was in year nine, so I was about 15, 16. And then it wasn't until I was about 18 where they were like, okay, you've gone through puberty. You've had your x-rays and they, like, I had a lot of checkups all the time. Changed doctors because I had gone over age. So I had to go to an adult hospital. And that's when they're like, okay, it's clearly becoming a problem because it's not stopping. It's getting worse and your pain's getting worse as well. So that's when they're like, surgery needs to be done.
Was that a relief in the end? Because there's the pain side, but I suppose there's the aesthetic side as well and the way you look.
Yeah, they said I could have the surgery before that for cosmetic reasons. And I wanted to because I felt uncomfortable, especially at a young age, being a girl at school. I was very self-conscious about it. But my parents were like, well, we're not paying all that money just for you. So I was like, okay. So I waited it out. And then when they told me, I was actually generally happy and mum was freaking out. But I was like, well, I've always wanted this. So I'm happy to go ahead with it. Because of the pain. I really wanted to get, like, it was in constant pain towards the end. And then also for the cosmetic reasons, really. Like, I wanted to not be, and like, I don't know, I think when you get older as well, it got worse, like I was getting, my body image was getting worse as well because I just didn't feel nice about it. So generally, yeah, I was happy about it.
Yeah, you talk about your teenage years there, and for many people it's quite a reflective time in your life. You can be very self-conscious about it.
Exactly.
And when you've got something like that, do you look back on those years as a particularly nervous moment where you weren't that confident in yourself because of it?
Oh yeah, and I wasn't one of the skinny kids either. I was one of the, not fat or anything, but I was one of the pudgier ones, I guess. So I always had that self-conscious side. And with the spine, because it was bent, like I had this huge kind of, had no spinal to the right-hand side of my body. And so it's hard to explain and not really show it, but, and it looked like this big fat roll on the side of me. And that was just because there was no spine there, so it had this huge indent, and that always got to me. Like, I was never the kid wearing a bikini, anything like that at the beach. Like, I always had to cover up, and I was on the bigger side, so I wasn't that comfortable at all. And as well, knowing about my spine, it just made it even worse, I think, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I'm right in saying that when the initial decision was made to have surgery, you waited a year before you actually had it, and that was primarily so you could get the first year of university out of the way.
Yeah.
Good decision?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I got a PE degree in teaching, they were like, you don't want to have the surgery just before uni because you want to meet friends. You don't want to be kind of not being able to move. You want to socialise, do all the sporting things, etc. So, like, you'll just go into that and have your first year and not worry about it. So, and it was such a great idea because especially my first year of PE teaching, that was all the sporting side. So the next 3 years, there was a lot more academics to it. So that kind of worked out as well, because obviously after surgery, I wasn't able to do much for a while. And then I also had those friends from uni who would help me through those 2 weeks and were there for me as well. So it was really nice.
And you used that opportunity as well to, I suppose, educate people about what it was as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it's more common than we realise, but we don't often notice it or pay attention to it.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people, when I told, I was like, oh yeah, I'm having surgery these holidays, they're like, for what? And they'll be like, scoliosis, and they'll have no idea what it was. And so a lot of people now do, people still ask me, they're like, what is that? And so it's great to educate them, because it is a thing that's currently increasing, I think, as well. I don't know if it's because I know more about it now, but I definitely do find a lot of people do have it. May not be as severe, but they still have something there. And it's a lot more common in girls as well, females. So I did actually have a friend of mine as a guy who went through scoliosis surgery as well at the same time as me, which was weird, but in a different hospital. But yeah, it's much more common in females, and I had a lot more female friends, and they were intrigued by it, yeah.
So when surgery day or week comes around, are you apprehensive before that?
I guess so. I think my mum more was. She was researching all the time. She was ringing up people that had had it before and asking, like, what can I do? What should she do? What's some advice? Whereas I was just more like, yeah, like, didn't really think about it. I think I more put it to the back of my mind to help with coping with it. But like I said, I was keen for the surgery. So I think that's what made me more fine with it. It wasn't until literally the hour before, where the bed rolled up to me and were like, okay, we're going to take you away now, is when I started crying, and just all the emotions came out then. Otherwise, before that, there was not a moment where I was really worried at all, which was, I think, a good thing in the long run. Yeah.
Certainly sounds like a good thing in the long run, because it is very major surgery. But reading your blogs about it and the way you've written about it in the past, demeanor's like your doctor that you had, where he's so calm, that must put you at ease as well.
Oh my God, he was the most chilled out person I've ever met. And I really wanted to talk about more on my blog, but I felt like it was getting too long. But he was so chilled out. He was my second doctor. So he was the one that I went to after I had gotten to a certain age and they couldn't take me anymore. And he was one of the best in Australia. So mum and dad were like, we don't care how much. Like, we want the best. We don't want something to go wrong. And he was just, he's done it for so long. He does 2 a days, 5 to 6 days a week. And he was just, he would just come in with a coffee and be like, okay, we're all ready. And I'd be like, excuse me, I'm hooked up here. Like, you're coming with a coffee, you're late. Like, what is going on? He's like, it's fine, Alex. Like, I've done this so many times. Like, I don't need to, like, prepare. It's, yeah, he was, and he would just casually come in after the surgery, which was always a nice thing. And he'd be like, how are you going? Okay. He'd do a quick talking, just walk out and be like, okay, bye. Like, it was weird, but it was cool. Like, it was nice to have someone like that, especially when I've got mum who's like freaking out, and then I have him to like chill mum out as well.
Is that, so it all balances out in the end, and that actually works quite nicely.
Yeah.
So effectively it was 2 bouts of surgery on different sections of your back, but the second surgery was not such a success, primarily in terms of the treatment afterwards. What kind of things are we talking about there?
The first surgery, all of that went fine. It wasn't even the surgery. Like, my back was fine both times. It was literally the nurses. And I was in a lot more pain the second time around, which we were told it would be the opposite. Just there was a lot more discomfort. I was obviously had the 2 surgeries. And so I was more cooped up and the whole of the back was in pain. The nurses in the second time around, they weren't as friendly. They were just more, not bedside manner. Their bedside manner was not good. And it was just more like, get it done, get an x-ray done, rush you in, rush you out, we'll give you food and then leave, give you the pills, etc. Whereas the first week, they were so nice. They talked to you, they'd ask about your life. They would be very calm and they'd try and help you whenever they could. So it was just, it was weird because it was the same hospital, same kind of area. It was just, I don't know, just different people that were looking after me. It didn't make it worse. It just wasn't as nice as the first week. But either way, like, I'm not going to have it. I'm glad I didn't have 2 bad weeks. So, yeah.
One of the striking things for me as well is the helicopter ride back home, where you were promised some drugs, but they weren't drugs.
Yeah.
What is that like to go through?
It was horrific. Because I live 5 hours from Sydney, and the drive home would have been ridiculous, like stopping and starting. It would have turned into a 10-hour ride. They were like, yeah, helicopter. And then Mum was like, okay, what about the drugs? What should we do about that? They're like, oh, we'll give them to you. Like, we give them to the paramedics that are on the helicopter. They'll have it all, so don't worry. So we were like, okay. Gave me something just before I went. Said goodbye to Mum because she obviously had to drive home. And I got to, like, the airport where the helicopter is. And I was like, oh, I'm starting to feel a bit more pain. Do you have my pills? And they're like, no. And I was like, sorry, what? They're like, we didn't get anything from you. And I was like, okay. And I can't really remember, but I think I had my phone. I don't know what happened there because I don't remember texting Mum or Dad. I think I was like, I don't want to worry them. I'll be fine. They said, we can give you this breathe-in thing. So I breathe in this, like, Panadol type thing. I don't know what it was. And it kind of subsided, but, like, for 15 minutes. And then otherwise that was all that I got. So I was – the journey was about, like, an hour and a half, I think, and I was in a lot of pain. I think I was trying to, like, fall asleep on there. It was very claustrophobic in there. It was very tiny. I was lying down. I couldn't see out windows. It was a very weird journey. And just trying not to really think about it, to be honest. And then – we got to my town, but then I live on the outskirts, so I had to get in an actual ambulance, and then that was rocky. Still didn't have any pills, and they didn't have anything for me. The best that they could do was give me paracetamol, but that wasn't doing anything at all. And I got home, and I said to Dad, I was like, I'm going to bed. I have no pills. I've had the worst journey. Just went to bed. And so Dad rang Mum and was like, you need to get here ASAP, because she's... I was just trying to supply it, because I didn't want my parents to worry, so I just kind of put on a tough act, I guess, and got to bed and was like, oh.
And just rode it out as best
you
can. Yeah,
and then when Mum came, I was like, hand them to me now. Give them to me. Yeah.
So then the recovery from that, how long does it take you before you actually feel like you can do stuff again?
Well, so you have the 2 weeks, and then I got home, and they say you have to start walking, so... The first few days, I didn't do anything. I just laid in bed, sat up, obviously went to the shower and stuff. Eventually, they were like, okay, you have to start walking. So I walk around my veranda after the first week and try and do more and more each time. It wasn't until 6 weeks where I felt physically much, much better. And we went on a holiday and much better, but the walking thing, it was like... I obviously knew how to walk, but my stamina and my lungs and everything were just weak. And so the first time that I did a proper walk, I was puffing and because I've never obviously been a really big person, or I've never had, I don't know, it's just like, but my lungs, and I was breathing so heavily, and it was this weird thing, and I was like, okay, I'm really out of breath. Like, I've never had this, even after running cross country for like 2 kilometers or something. Like, it was this weird pain, and it was only for a few hundred meters, and walking very slowly as well. And Mum and Dad were like, it's fine, it's just what you have to go through. And eventually that got better, and I got further, and I wasn't feeling so out of breath. But really, you feel so much better after 6 weeks. And then you can't really start doing stuff until 3 months. But yeah,
was that
walking was all
ever frustrating, like, so infuriating that you used to be able to do all this stuff, run 2K, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're out of breath when you're doing a walk.
Because I was a very active kid and it was a beach holiday, so I couldn't really go surfing. I couldn't really do anything, really. I had to go in the waves, so my mum had to be in front of me so they wouldn't bash me over. And I was a team sport. Like, I couldn't play netball for a while. I couldn't play netball for 6 months. Rugby for 9 months or something like that. And then the gym was the only thing that I got into after 3 months, because it was the only thing that I was able to do, because they told me, like, you have to try and get your cardio up and get your heart going, well, get it stronger again, and your lungs. So it was frustrating, because I was such an active kid, and I, lying in bed for those 6 weeks, it was horrible. Like, I'd be watching videos, like, and that was the only thing. And because I was in a country town, all my friends were in other country towns, so I couldn't have those friends come over just like that. Like,
so was it isolated then
as well? Yeah, yeah. And my brother was out doing stuff. Mum and dad were having parties because it was Christmas time. And I was just sitting in bed going like, okay, this is like not that great. But had to be done, I guess, yeah.
And that brings me on perfectly to the fitness aspect. Because before surgery, that wasn't really that much of a focus in your life. But after surgery, it certainly becomes a main focus. Was building your strength up kind of the main focus? What drove you down that line?
Yeah. Because the doctor did say, he's like, you have to make sure your core is very strong to hold up your spine. I think it was because I was so cooped up, I was like, I want to get... Because I did gym a little bit before, but I had no idea what I was doing. And I just kind of went and did stuff.
Just winged
jumped
it.
On a machine and used it. And I wanted to get back to it because it was something that I enjoyed. But it was something that I was allowed to do with the spine. So I was like, okay, I'll go into it. And I found this program, which I fell in love with. And I was doing that. A lot of the exercises I had to modify because obviously I couldn't do it. But doing that, because I did the program 3 times, I could see myself getting stronger and stronger, which was amazing. And literally that year, I just fell in love with fitness and the gym. And I wanted to know more. I wanted to learn more. And yeah, so it was... I probably might have gone into it, but it was initially because of the surgery that I got into it then.
We were talking a bit before we started recording about how your spine in its current state, if it affects anything, but you don't really have something to compare it to.
Yeah.
In the past.
Yeah. Like, because there's not as much flexibility and doing squats and deadlifts, and I'd never did that before surgery, so... I can't really compare it, but I can tell from looking at others and how their technique is, it's much different to mine, but I've tried to fix it and I just physically can't because I can't move my spine. It hasn't frustrated me as much because I can't compare it to before, so that has been nice as well, but on the other hand, it's like it would be nice because I can't lift as much as I think I could because of that as well. I worry about putting too much strain on the spine and making it horrible for the future, really.
Interestingly, it started off as primarily a weight loss thing, but then it became a strength building thing. Was there something that triggered that?
Yeah, so I wanted to lose weight, and I was, I was never like the skinny kid or anything, so I'd have always wanted to lose the fat. And then it wasn't until I moved to the UK actually, and I started to learn more, I started to gain knowledge and looked at people in the weights area, and I was like, okay, maybe I could get into something like that. There was always this thing of like, you've probably heard like, women in the weight section, you're going to get bulky and look like a man, and it's like, well, that's not true. And through Instagram, I saw a lot of people doing this, and following them and doing their actual different programs was how I learned from it. And I wanted to become that tone, and I wanted to be a really strong person. I didn't want to be weak or fragile. And people, because of my back, having that excuse, I didn't want to use it as an excuse to be weak. And so I wanted to become a lot more stronger and not have people, not me having to rely on other people for things that I have to do in everyday life, really.
Yeah. There seems to be a lot more of these positive messages coming out about women in particular and doing that type of exercise and that type of fitness. You look at the This Girl Can campaign, for example, over here. Are those messages still few and far between, or are they getting better, and do women still need more of those positive messages?
It's gotten so much better. It still needs to become better, but it has, since I first started, and stories that I hear where women wouldn't go in the weight section because they'd feel judged by men in there, and it's become a lot more nicer for women. It's the messages out there. Instagram females out there, they're huge influencers with huge followings, and they can show you that there's nothing to worry about. If you prove yourself and you work on yourself, then there's nothing to worry about. And you just put your headphones in, listen to your music, and don't look at anyone else, and you forget about them. And that's what I did. And I've never had the problem. I think I've always been a confident person in that way. I've never had that problem, but I do know a lot of girls that I've talked to, and they are so worried. Like, even my friends are like, I get worried that people are looking at me. I'm like, if they're looking at you, then they're not working on themselves. Like, a lot of people in there don't really care what you're doing. And if they are, then that's their own fault. They're clearly self-conscious about something. So, yeah. And I think it does need to get better for women and be not as, I don't know what the word is, but it is getting there, I think, definitely, especially through Instagram and these fitness people.
Yeah, turning to Instagram then, because you obviously have your own Instagram account that has built up something of a following. What are the main messages you try and put out through that to your followers?
My main one I try to is scoliosis. I try to talk about it a little bit, and I've had so many people direct message me privately and just ask all these questions. A lot of girls that are going and having surgery, and they ask me, like, what's your advice, all of that, which has been great. But another message is really the fact of nowadays, which is changing a lot, is that not everything on Instagram is real. And also the positive messages about girls as well and doing stuff in the gym. But my other main one is not everything is real on there. People take 1,000 photos and they pick the one good one and they don't show the bad one. People who have these huge followings of 8 million people, they only show the good things in their life, but they do go through the struggles. They do go through struggles in their life as well. But a lot of people look at them and they look up to them going, oh my God, their life is so perfect. But a lot of people now that I follow as well, and I've tried to show through photos, is that it's not. Like, not everything's 100% in their life perfect. They just show the good stuff because that's what gets them likes and everything. So.
And you want to show that.
Yeah, your real stuff. Like, and people that Photoshop as well. Like, there's the extent where you can edit a photo, which, I do that. I edit, like, I make it a different colour or something. But there's people that Photoshop to make their ass look bigger, or their waist a little bit smaller, and I just think it's just fake. Like, when you see them in real life, you're like, okay, you don't look like that on Instagram, why are you showing it? It's all just for a following, really. So I try and put those messages out there, and a lot of people that have your bigger impact and a bigger influence are doing that as well, which is amazing. So it's becoming a lot more prevalent as well, I've seen this year with that.
Was that a strange thing to do at first, because you are essentially opening yourself up to an entire community? Is that something you've gradually got used to as time has gone on?
With my first, I think, I can't really remember what the first one was, but I remember it was like a really bad photo of me, I think on the beach or something, and then compared to one that I had uploaded previously, and I was like, it's not always like this. Like, I do not look like this all the time. And in saying that, like, I don't exactly have the best photos. I don't mind too much about my content. It's more just I want to put out the messages out there through my writing and stuff. But with that photo, I was very self-conscious, and also progress photos, like, that's a huge one, because you're technically in your underwear showing your progress, but you're showing off a lot, and especially you love your photo now, but your photo before, it's a bit like, okay, I don't really want people to see that, but I want them to see how far I've come. And it is daunting at times. I do get a lot of comments from people saying, okay, that's a lot to put out there. And I'm like, well, it's just what I want to do. I want to help people know that that can happen. Like, the transformation, like, you can do it. The other one, showing, like, how what's real and what's not, like, that happens as well. Like, it's fine to show it.
And that comes with your blogging as well, where you're opening yourself up, because you've obviously talked about the scoliosis journey, the fitness journey, but then there's relationship things and there's motivational things as well.
Yeah.
Again, is that something that the response, does it make it all worth it when you're opening yourself up?
It is a little bit scary, and I think that only with a certain few things, like, do become personal, and I'm a bit like, oh, should I put that on there? I do try and hold back a little bit. But then I'm also like, well, this is me, and if you don't like it, then you can go away. Opening yourself up, it is a scary thing. But I think because I have a bit of a following, but it's not huge compared to a lot of other people, where I think it would be more daunting for them. So at the moment, it's kind of like, it's nice, and I like it because my blog thing is only new, and it's just somewhere where I can write about something that's too long for Instagram and that no one will read. And my blog is like, if people really want to read it, they'll go and enjoy it. And if no one, there are a few people that do read it, which is nice, and they let me know. It's just, I don't know, I've never really been too scared to put myself out there. I don't know why, but it's just...
That's just part of your personality.
Yeah.
So in the messages that you do put out there, are they messages that you maybe think you needed to hear when you were younger?
Mm.
And is that partly why you do it?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Definitely. And when I was young, I am still quite young, but Instagram only really started when I was 15, 16, but it wasn't huge. You didn't have these big followers. You didn't have making your own Instagram accounts, all of that. It was just literally you'd put whatever photo. You put a picture of a flower up and, like, you'd get a few likes. It was nothing. But now that that's about and it's so much more prevalent, these younger kids, especially my school kids, as a teacher, my school kids, the stuff that I hear from them, like, oh, I wish I looked like her, or I wish I looked like this, and blah, blah, blah. And I was even like that. I used to be like that even 2 years ago. I used to be like, I want to be like this person, I want to be like that person. And through Instagram, I found that everyone has their own body, everyone has their own personality. You don't want to be like someone else. You want to have your own. You want to be your own. You want to not. You want to be that random person. You don't want to be like a sheep, really, if that makes sense.
Don't want to follow the herd.
Yeah, don't want to follow the herd. And I've definitely become that. I'm my own person. I don't really care what people think. I don't care if they judge. Once you get to know me, I'm a very weird person, a lot of my friends say. And I don't care. Like, it's just who I am. And I think when I was younger, I got worried about that at times. And there were certain people who I wouldn't show it to, like the popular kids at school and things like that. And I would be scared to put myself out there. And I know kids these days, they're worrying about what their makeup looks like. Or like my year sevens, they're drawing in their eyebrows now. Like, I never did that when I was younger. And it's just all of this that I think needs to be out there. And because they use Instagram, they use Twitter, Snapchat, all of that, these influencers who have a bigger following and that they follow do need to show this, I think. And I would have loved that when I was a kid because, yeah, maybe things could have been a little bit different. Because I think of that, I am a very shy person when you first get to meet me. And I think if I had heard these messages, then it would have been a little bit different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And speaking of daunting things as well, as people will tell from your accent, you are from Australia.
Yes.
And you moved over here to Chelmsford.
Yeah.
That, as daunting moves go, coming to a new place for the first time where there's no university, there's no onus on you to actually go and meet people.
Mm.
Scary, but how do you manage that? Is it just a case of throwing yourself out there?
Yeah, it was just literally that. My first few friends were through my agency who were also from Australia, but they all lived in London, and so I couldn't really see them all the time. And then my next few friends were my housemates, and Izzy and Richard, and they became my two really good friends, and it was just me literally going, let's go out for a drink. Because I hadn't gone out in Chelmsford. It wasn't for a few months where I was like, okay, I need to find friends in Chelmsford because otherwise it's going to get boring and I'm not going to like it. And so this new girl moved in, and I was like, hey, want to go for a drink? And that turned into a night out. Richard joined us, and now we're inseparable pretty much. And then the school, when new teachers came, I obviously met them. But to be fair, I've met a lot of my friends that are here through Instagram and doing meetups and just literally going, okay, we're going to Body Power in Birmingham. Who wants to join? And you'd go and meet them at train station for the first time, and then you became friends. Like, it's, I was so thankful, and a lot of people question my Instagram, but if I didn't have it, then I wouldn't have as many friends here in UK as I have. And a lot of them have influenced my life. So
yeah, everyone talks about social media, and there are downsides. But there's upsides as well.
Yeah,
and if you use it in the right way,
yeah,
it can have such a positive, which is
exactly
what you're talking about there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I suppose, is the overriding message then from this chat and from the messages that you put out there is don't be afraid, basically.
Yeah. And I think through my surgery, I was a lot more confident. I went to boarding school. I then went straight to uni. I then came straight here. I haven't lived at home for 10 years. I haven't lived at home since I was 14. So it's, that as well has helped. But my surgery, I got a lot more confident. I was a lot, and through all of that and just putting myself out there and not being worried about what people think or worrying about that I'm going to fail, and just giving it a go. Yeah, it's,
and it makes you a stronger person.
Yeah,
for it.
Yeah, it makes you so much stronger, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with that, we better wrap up
yep.
this latest episode of the podcast. And thank you so much, Alex, for
thank you for having me.
Coming on and also speaking so openly about what you've been through, both surgery-wise and also fitness-wise as well. And I think there's a lot of positive messages that people can take from this. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Essex Live on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram, or go to our website, essexlive.news. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever it is you get your podcasts.